Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the deep heart of Liberty State, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer but moving to action. And as Luke 17, 20 through 21 says, "Now having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, 'The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed. Nor will they say, look, here it is, or there it is. For behold, the kingdom of God is in your midst.'" In your midst, or inside you in some translations. Psalm 91. I haven't shared this story. I don't think I've shared this story on the radio ever. In Iraq, when we crossed the line from Kuwait into Iraq, I read Psalm 91 with my officers. And if you haven't read Psalm 91, I just challenge you, go home tonight and read Psalm 91. Fantastic prayer, and just you feel the presence of the Lord when you're reading it. And every day while we were in country in Iraq, I prayed Psalm 91 because the Lord has a bunch of promises in Psalm 91 about protecting warriors, protecting those in the fight. And it's interesting that David, writing this, was somebody in biblical history that he really took it on the chin a few times. And sometimes it was, you know, sometimes it was looking hopeless for him. But he always kept his hope in God. And we need to always keep our hope in Jesus Christ. Jesus knows what's going on down here. He knows what we need before we even ask for it. We need to walk in victory. Attacks from evil will happen. And we must walk in victory, according to Luke 10:19, with the authority that Christ gave us over serpents or lies and deceit, over scorpions, to tread on these things. Scorpions symbolizing wicked men or threats or scourging. And then over all the power of the enemy. And this is an offensive position for Christians, to tread upon the serpent and the scorpion and over all the power of the enemy. And it's a great prayer to take that offensive position. Now, also here in the church, we need to humble ourselves and realize we don't know what we don't know. And there's a lot of arguments today over denominational differences, and people get really tied up in that when we should be realizing the Holy Spirit is going to correct the things that we have wrong in us through sanctification and change those parts of our soul that need to be changing, because our spirit is already saved through salvation. Sanctification through the Holy Spirit, changing the parts of us, the four aspects of the soul: identity, will, reason or the mind, and emotion, and changing those so they're more like Christ. And if we understand that, then we don't get bogged down in all these arguments all the time between denominations, because what we're not focusing on what is different. We're focusing on being in the presence of the Lord. And when we're in the presence of the Lord, all that other stuff fades away, including, and most importantly, fear. Fear. It's a weapon that Satan uses to try to get people to be either distracted or off the purpose for which he has called them to be. And this is for all of us. So Psalm 91, when David wrote that, it really helps you in those times when Satan is trying to buffet you, trying to instill fear in you, is trying to instill fear in those around you. And so we just want to be in the presence of the Lord. He's got this. He wrote this before the beginning of time. He knew where we would be. He knew we would be here before the beginning of time. He knew that all of these trials and tribulations would happen before the beginning of time. And I think it's important, too, to understand that these trials and tribulations become part of our testimony, part of a great testimony, actually. Think about the great stories in the Bible and the trials and tribulations that made them great stories, great witnesses of His glory and honor, giving us a reason to praise Him because He loved us first. While we were still yet in our sins. Psalm 91, walking through that buffeting, is important because over the next year, year and a half, we are going to see some things that we haven't seen in modern America before. We're going to see the left become more radicalized, more violent. We're already seeing signs of that. And today I want to take a moment and I want to go through this. But first, I want to read you something that I just posted up on the internet. Most of you probably already know that the House has hired a private investigator. And here's my statement in regards to this, and it's up online. Feel free to share it far and wide, but here's my response. The House hiring of a private investigator is nothing more than a Mueller-style witch hunt. They are looking into whether I, quote, engaged in, planned, or promoted political violence, end quote, or am associated with groups that do. Well, this should be a very short investigation then. Because I'm not a member of, nor am I associated with, Antifa, the Socialist Rifle Association, Redneck Revolt, John Brown Gun Club, the Muslim Brotherhood, or Hamas. I will not back down, I will not give up, and I will continue fighting for you and to make Washington great again. Those organizations, if you have never heard of them, are affiliated leftist organizations and or Islamist organizations. And as I've been talking about on the show for quite a while, in briefing people on the great memo written by Rich Higgins when he was on the National Security Council about what is coming against this country, why it's important to understand the real measure and level of violence from these leftist organizations. So I'm going to give some very specific examples today to educate everybody out there on who these organizations are. First, let's start with the Socialist Rifle Association. The Socialist Rifle Association is interesting in that they actually have a chapter in Spokane, Washington. They have come out as this supposed bulwark against, you know, fascism and capitalism and all this garbage these guys spew. And the fact of the matter is, though, they're tied and they have members that are tied to other organizations on the left, which brings us now to Antifa. And I've talked about Antifa's links to Jason Wilson of The Guardian, Christopher Mathias of Huffington Post, Matthew Hayden of SPLC, according to this article by PJ Media, written by Tyler O'Neill. And I think I want to get into some more specifics. Most of you heard about this attack on this conservative journalist that CNN tried to downplay. A lot of you probably haven't heard, though, of this individual, and I'm not going to name him because I don't want to give him credit, who in an actual manifesto admitted he was Antifa and who tried to firebomb a federal building and was killed in the process. Now, most folks haven't I haven't ever heard of that happening. You can go look it up. It's on many different articles. Probably the best one is by Paul Joseph Watts. Then you have Antifa being investigated by the FBI for plotting to buy guns from a Mexican cartel for, quote, armed rebellion, end quote, down on the Daily Caller. Then you have this article from the Clarion Project detailing an FBI field report that was delivered to Andrew McCabe, the acting director of the FBI, on July 11th, 2017, detailing how a group of Antifa joined their counterpart in Germany and how there was evidence of meetings between those individuals and associates of ISIS. Then you've got this horrific, just kind of ghastly thing. This was on Red State, how some Antifa people were arrested for allegedly shoving some folks at a pro-life march and throwing urine on them in Boston. And again, this from Red State. You can take a look at it yourself. So that's Antifa. Then there's also somebody, another organization called Redneck Revolt, which is also associated with something called the John Brown Gun Club. Now, if you go back in history and you look into the history of who John Brown was, it's pretty horrific. John Brown was a terrorist with clearly no morals. So it's interesting somebody would name their group after that. So this John Brown Gun Club actually published an article against yours truly, the Puget Sound John Brown Gun Club. But this guy that firebombed the federal building was actually wearing – there's pictures of him wearing a John Brown Gun Club hat. Redneck Revolt, similarly – on their own website, and this has been screen captured, so if they try to take it down, we already got it. Quote, we believe in the right of militant resistance. We believe in the need for revolution. This is from their website and the title of what they believe. And then it says, Redneck Revolt believes there will have to be a complete restructuring of society. This is the term Marxists use all over the world to say they want to overthrow the existing power structure. Okay. Now, Redneck Revolt also, and this you can check out online as well, the Daily Caller had this article, offered a training manual on terrorism and guerrilla warfare. Now, it's interesting that in that manual, it talks about attacks like happened to that federal building. And this manual is called the Mini Manual of Urban Guerrillas. It's put out by Carlos Margiela. And Carlos Margiela, it's important to understand, was a Brazilian communist. He was the founder of ALN, and he was responsible for, among other things, kidnapping, robbery, executions, and the kidnapping in 1969 of a U.S. ambassador, Charles Burke. And he was eventually shot by police later that year. So this is the manual that Redneck Revolt is putting out, the Mini Manual of Urban Guerrilla Warfare. And you can actually go check it out online, read through it, and see if they're not following some of the things that are written in that manual. Then you have at the national level this Trevor Loudon actually talked about this on the show here a month ago about how the Communist Party USA, the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and the Democrat Socialists of America were deciding to combine membership in forces to essentially take over the Democrat Party. All right, I want to bring this down locally as well. These guys are not – it's not just this – I don't know how to say it. It's not just this national – there are local chapters of these organizations. And so when I got death threats from folks associated with Antifa and it looks like it might be twice now. And another site, Emerald City Antifa, posted on their site, "We need to put Mr. Shea right." You get to understand this level of violence that's out there, and it's a level of violence that the media is not talking about. And so I bring this up because it's important, A, not to fear this, and B, to understand that there is a very clear agenda. And it's actually part of this social justice warrior targeting sequence these guys do. It doesn't matter what somebody says. It doesn't matter how they say it. It doesn't matter how careful they are. Once somebody is targeted, they try to find anything they can possible to twist something. It could be, for example, a picture of Braveheart on your page, and they try to twist that into something that's militant, right? You have to understand this, and people that don't understand the type of fight they're in, they don't understand the enemy, they're going to lose the battle. So it's important for people to be educated on what is happening. So the social justice warrior targeting sequence goes something like this. They target a statement or an action of an individual. Then they try to put a whole bunch of social pressure on that person to apologize. And then when that person apologizes, they say, oh, the apology's not sufficient, or they just say it's irrelevant. Then they actually increase the social pressure on this person until the target is destroyed. That's how they operate. It's a five-part targeting sequence, okay? And they're following something that this doctrine was developed in the former Soviet Union by the KGB. General Mihai Pachepa in Disinformation has written about it. Yuri Bezmianov, there's a great video online. He talks about the stages of Soviet subversion. They talk about how this operates, and this was something that was developed over a period of time. And now we're seeing it here in the United States of America. So because this is happening, first and foremost, we all need to be doing spiritual battle and spiritual warfare. We need to understand what we're coming against, and we need to pray, and we need to be on the offense as Christians in the prayer realm and in our prayer rooms, that Jesus Christ meant what he said when he said that he has given us authority over all the power of the evil one. And we need to start there, because socialism and Marxism is evil. It was rooted in evil. And I've done part of a show before on that. So with that context for today, now I'm going to give you your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, as I mentioned before, Venezuela, 22 of 23 states were without power, 90% of the country without telecommunication service. I don't know if that's improved. I haven't seen any follow-ups with it, and I'm going to keep my eye on it. The report out of a prison there that they had resorted to cannibalism, just some horrible stories. Also on the international front, in Israel, UK British commandos have been sent to Bahrain, and apparently they are not backing down in regards to Iran and what happened with the seizure of two British oil tankers. So we're going to keep our eye on that as the tensions in the Middle East continue to ratchet up. And this coming to us from Debka File, it says London rejects quid pro quo with Iran. But they are deploying these commandos to help reinforce oil tanker security in the Gulf. So it looks like they're, you know, another flashpoint's being set up. All right. On the national front, BLM opens 1.3 million acres to being either transferred to the state of Alaska or to development. Finally, some wise use of land in Alaska. BLM seems headed in the right direction. And in addition to that, with BLM, a so-called sagebrush rebel was appointed BLM deputy director of policy. This is Mountain State Legal Foundation's William Perry Penley. What a great appointment by the Trump administration. And it's the Bureau's second highest ranking political position behind the director. So It's going to be interesting to see. He did a great job at Mountain States Legal Foundation defending people's property rights throughout the West. What William Perry Penley will do in that position with the Bureau of Land Management. All right, also on the national front, Marxists. I want to talk about a website. If you don't know about this website, it's called Unconstrained Analytics. Unconstrained Analytics. Rich Higgins of the Memo fame actually helps to run this site. And they have a new publication out. It was actually came out in April called Remembering the Misremembered Left, the Left Strategy and Tactics to Transform America. It is a couple hundred pages, but it is an absolute fantastic read. You can actually download it via PDF from the site. And they've put it up there free. But it's a new report by them, and I think it's absolutely critical to understand what the left is doing today in America so that we can actually be effective in fighting back, not just in the spiritual realm, but also in the political realm. Also on the national front, the Islamists. Let's talk about Ilhan Omar. This is coming to us from WorldNet Daily. The title of this article, Ilhan Omar joins praise of man who pummeled Rand Paul. This is the guy that was convicted of assaulting Senator Rand Paul. And apparently that didn't go over very well. And advocating violence. Now, remember, this is the same Ilhan Omar who I believe tweeted about yours truly here a while back. Anyway, check that out. It's a WorldNet Daily article. Also on WorldNet Daily, Somali refugees arrested in the United States attempting to, wait for it, join ISIS. Muslim man declared he wanted to be the beheading person. He wanted to be the actual executioner. The Justice Department announced Monday the arrests of Ahmed Mahad Mohammed and Abdi Yamani Hussein while they were attempting to board a flight at Tucson International Airport on Friday, Washington Examiner reported. They had been under surveillance by an FBI agent. So the FBI did a great job there. All right, also on the national front, Arkansas halting civil asset forfeiture and closing a federal loophole, great step forward in protecting the Fourth Amendment. Fantastic, actually. All right, talking about Christian persecution on the national front. The word Christian apparently is now hate speech. The actual word itself, at least according to some social media outlets, and some reporting that's going on too. And this follows in the heels of this whole hate agent thing with Facebook. Now, I want to talk about something. I want to jump back to this so-called investigation here in Washington State. The third scope of the investigation was to assess the threat level of political violence posed by individuals and groups in Washington State. So what you have happening is an attempt to create a list effectively of people, and without any trial, without any due process, without any jury of the peers, label them as hate agents or label them as threats. That's a fairly alarming thing. And this is interesting too, because the Guardian newspaper, who's been attacking yours truly, just came out with an article that says if others have rifles, we'll have rifles, and essentially apologizes for Antifa and the John Brown Gun Club in the Puget Sound for arming. So why would they on one hand try to disarm us and then arm? Why on the other hand would they try to go through no due process to label us something? Similar to what other regimes have done in history, most notably the former Soviet Union. Why would they do that? Makes you think, doesn't it? And we need to learn about this stuff and understand it. All right, on the regional front, 12 tax advisory votes are coming to Washington State. You heard that right. 12 tax advisor votes. That's how many taxes were raised by the Democrats. Wow. Also, on the regional front, we have this wolf issue. More depredations happening, killing of cattle happening in Washington State. It's getting worse and worse. It's affecting part of our strategic food supply. Our cattle in America, our sheep in America, our deer, our elk, our moose, it's all part of a strategic food supply. A lot of people don't think about it that way, but it is. Also on the regional front, Washington State releases hundreds of illegal aliens charged with crimes, including felonies. It's coming to us from Zero Hedge. These felonies included homicide, sexual assault, kidnapping, according to Breitbart. Now, I talked about this article before, but the fact remains that they're spending money in very wasteful ways, in my opinion, in Washington State, and then doing the one thing that government really is charged to do to protect the people against violence like this and evil like this. And Washington State is releasing hundreds of illegal aliens. Wow. All right. Also on the local front, August 17th, Marble, Washington. It's the Land of the Free conference up there. Tom DeWeese, Dan Happel, Reverend Matthew Cummings. 10 to 6 p.m. I think there's going to be a barbecue there, too. You get a chance to go up there and visit and learn. And Tom DeWeese, again, one of the foremost experts, had him on the show here last week. And you get to find out about, you know, what's going on in America and how you specifically can fight back. So I think that's pretty critical, especially in the days ahead of what we're facing. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for me and Victoria and the show. If you get a chance, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to keep us on the air, go to VoteShea.com. And we're also on iTunes and Podbean. If you do get a chance, go to my personal Facebook page, check out the statement, check out what's going on, and understand, too, that what's happening to the president at the national level is happening also at the state level and the local level, and you're seeing these patterns crop up all over America. So it's time for us to stand up. And say, enough is enough. And we need to make sure, if you have not voted yet in the primary election, make sure you vote. It's a mail-in ballot. Make sure to get your ballot in for the primary election. Your vote does matter. And when we don't show up, they do. And this is what happens. Chaos, the undermining of the foundations of America, the attempt to eviscerate the Constitution, and everything that we hold dear in this great country, and that so many fought and died for. Some are friends. So, please, I just beg you, if you just take the time and vote, it makes that big a difference. All right, my guest today is retired Major General Paul Vallely. And an expert on foreign policy, also has been really, I think, inspirational in some of the investigations we're going to be talking about today and getting the truth out about what really happened in places like Benghazi. General Vallely, how are you doing, sir? It's great to have you back on.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate the kind invitation.
Well, let's talk about this Benghazi and kind of revisited. There was a Citizens Commission report that came out June 29, 2016, but it seems like Benghazi's been forgotten. If you could update the listeners on what you know and what's happening.
Well, a few of us back after 2012, formed the Citizens Commission on Benghazi as a request of some of the families, particularly Charles Woods, who's the father of Ty Woods, who was one of the four killed. And I've been working with Charles for quite a while. And all through the hearings, congressional hearings that were headed up by Trey Gowdy, we did a lot of work of interviewing people, investigating it, and presenting that information to the committee and Trey Gowdy. But then all of a sudden, Trey Gowdy stopped at about the 10-yard line, Matt. Never took it into the end zone. And we could never figure out why until I found out a few months ago that he was compromised. And I'm not going to tell you how, but he was compromised. Now, since that time, in the last 4 months, Charles Woods called me, and he said, you know, we have a number of members of the armed forces who were on duty that night during that 13 hours on September 11th, 2012, and that they say something different than Secretary Clinton said, Secretary Panetta, General Dempsey, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And we knew at that time all three of them were lying. I did, because they had said two things. We didn't have the intelligence really to near-time intelligence to go in and do a rescue operation. And number two, we didn't have the assets in the Mediterranean to launch a rescue operation. Well, we know, in fact, now from our recent interviews with individuals who are in the command and control centers at Central Command in Tampa, AFRICOM, which was in Stuttgart, Germany, but based out of Djibouti. Also, the carrier groups, the carrier group in the Mediterranean, plus the Air Force bases that we had in Sigonella, Spain, Germany, and Italy. And so we found out through them that they were told to stand down about the end of the second hour of the Benghazi attack. Remember at the annex, they had it where the ambassador was killed?
Yes.
Remember that at the consulate there? Yeah, and then they had the annex is where the Americans were, the what we call the go-to force. They were ready to go and assist the ambassador. Of course, they got there too late, and the house was already on fire. And they were actually told to stop at that time by the CIA station chief there. And then we found out an order came down. We tracked it back to the White House, Obama, Secretary Clinton, to take over the operation and do not launch any kind of a rescue operation. That was in about the second or third hour of that 13 hours.
Wow.
We could have had F-15s. We could have had our jets there in the third hour. We could have had manned Predators overhead. We could have launched the Marines from the fleet there. We had special operations forces in the area, along with the British. And so they lied to Congress. Now, this is a dereliction of duty, Matt. And I've got this information. We've passed it on to President Trump. He's the only one that can do anything about it. But here are these three senior American leaders in the State Department, which took over the operation, by the way, and issued the stand-down order. Then you had Department of Defense, and the Department of Defense is the one that conducts rescue operations. It's not the State Department, and they were all told to stand down. So this is a travesty of justice, and we owe it to the families to bring closure to this, and that's why we're bringing it up at this time and pressing it forward.
So what are the next steps? Because, I mean, this is just – just thinking about this – because we get the impression that it wasn't until much later that the delay came, but if it was in the first 2 to 3 hours, I mean, that's just reprehensible. What are the next steps to bring this forward, and how can how can people help to make sure that light gets shown back on this?
Well, as I said, only the president can do it by bringing to light the testimonies, the Clinton. Panetta made Secretary of Defense and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dempsey, and to hold them accountable, because what this is, Matt, is dereliction of duty at the highest level, aside with all the other collusion things that are going on with Clinton and even Obama now, guilty of a lot of things that we know. The fact they could have launched this very early on, And the gentleman that was on duty that night in Tampa, Florida, at Central Command, they were conducting a training exercise congruent with the Obama. I mean, not the Obama, but they were working this exercise there, which was the same time frame of that 13 hours. And the gentlemen in the command and control centers were told, forget tracking Benghazi, we're going to continue with our training exercise. And I can have him on your program. He is a wonderful guy, Will Cotell, and he'll be able to tell you what went on at that command and control center. And then another gentleman was at the command and control center in Ramstein. So if you can picture these command and control centers with all their television and displays up there, they're tracking all the assets in the Mediterranean. Marines, fleet forces, special forces, Air Force, and so on. And so they knew that night where everything was, and they knew what could have been dispatched to conduct that rescue operation.
Would love
That's
to
why
have,
we're bringing it to light.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have him on the show and really get that story out. So obviously this begs the question that the command to stand down came from the very highest levels. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, we've tracked it back to the White House, which gave the order through Hillary Clinton at that time. And it all had to deal with an arms deal that went bad, Matt. That's what started it all. That's why the ambassador was there in Benghazi. And another guy you should have on is a gentleman named Mark Turi. Mark Turi, T-U-R-I. He is the one that really headed up the arms deal. And those arms, as you may remember, were taken to Turkey and then smuggled into Syria and got in the hands of Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
That is, you know, with that kind of with that kind of smuggling going on, I mean, what was the purpose to allow that, to allow guns in the hands of what we would all, I think, clearly say are terrorists?
Well, absolutely. And these were the man pads, these shoulder armed missiles, anti-aircraft missiles that are shoulder fired. And so there were a lot of armed things going on. And then, of course, the militia groups that were operating there. But it all goes back to the mistake that the Obama administration and Clinton in the State Department to take out Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Since they took out Gaddafi, the thing has been in shambles. It's a country in dire need of a total restoration. So that was a mistake there. But there were so many mistakes, and all track back to the State Department and to the White House.
That's pretty incredible. I had heard a little bit about PSD 11 in regards to his Presidential Study Directive 11 in regards to President Obama that really it's all speculation right now because I understand it's classified, but groups like the Center for Security Policy, Washington Times have talked about this, that it was a policy shift by the Obama administration to actually end up supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in the
Correct.
Middle East. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that actually happened, and I had visited Egypt after the first revolution over there and then after the second revolution. And met with General al-Sisi on two occasions. I headed up a delegation going over there. And, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood, under Morsi, the one was overturned by the people of Egypt and reverted into another election where they actually elected General al-Sisi to be the president of Egypt. But at that time, we knew a lot of things were going forward, pushed forward by the Muslim Brotherhood. And, of course, a lot of that went into overflow into Benghazi and into that whole area over there in Libya. And so it became a mass confusion of different kinds of militias. They're all fighting one another or joined with one another. But we had information almost 3 to 4 weeks even before that attack happened. The British told us about it. We had a special forces colonel over there who had a special forces element of the U.S. Army over there, and he was told to, depart somewhere around 3 or 4 weeks before the actual Benghazi attack occurred. So, again, to have a White House put in charge of the State Department of a mess they created and then not allow the Defense Department to conduct a rescue operation. This is the ultimate negligence of duty by government officials.
Yeah, it's just incredible. We need to continue to shine light on that. I'm going to make sure that we get these other two folks on here and tell the story about it. I presume that President Trump has been briefed on this. Is there anything that we can do as citizens to put pressure on the president, or just let him know, I guess, better way to put it, let him know that we know about it and he should do something?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, Matt. That's actually the question you asked, and I didn't quite get to answer it for you. Yes, pressure on the radio stations, your listening audience, write letters, do anything you can to President Trump to help these families out and bring closure of those four that were lost over there during the attack on Benghazi on 9/11 on 2012. So anything that can be done to encourage the president. Of course, the president's balancing a lot of things right now. That whole Mueller investigation and all of the stuff that was colluded primarily emanating again from the White House and the State Department.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will continue to do this. I'm going to post this up on the Facebook page as well. I'd like to shift gears a little bit to China and then I'd like to talk a little bit about Iran as well.
Sure.
There's a lot happening in China right now. They continue what is very clearly a military buildup. They have an EMP testing facility that at least was made public by Free Beacon in a story there. Can you tell us where China is headed? Is it really something that we should, as Americans, be worried about at this point, or really should our focus be on what's happening in the Middle East?
Well, there's a couple of major concerns there. And, of course, the president's working on the economic and trade deals with China right now. But aside from that, you've got a very well-organized expansion of their military capability. They have really evolved in their fighter capability, in their navy, and they've modernized a great deal in the last 5 years. Same thing, Russia's doing the same thing, too. But I don't care where you go, Matt. You go to Europe. I was in Paris earlier this year. The Chinese are everywhere. They're in Africa. They're in Baluchistan. They're working that the Silk Road through Afghanistan from China to Afghanistan up into the Middle East. And they're all over Europe. You know, they took over our Panama Canal, running that down there, a Chinese company. The Chinese are in Central South America. So, yes, it's a very, very big concern and a threat in some areas to the United States. Russia's really not a big threat to the United States. Don't believe that are put out by all these people. Russia does not want to attack Europe. They don't want to attack the United States. But China is the biggest concern for sure.
Well, let's shift gears too and talk about Iran. There's quite a bit of tensions over there in Iran. Could you give the listeners an idea of what's actually happening there on the ground? And is there something that, you know, is there a conflict in the offing here by the end of the year, or do you think tensions are going to de-escalate?
No, I think they're going to escalate. I don't think Iran is going to back down at all. They're going to continue in the maritime area of attacking and taking over tankers and any kinds of ships at sea there. They're engaged in commerce, particularly all of those that are going through the Sea of Hormuz. But at the same time, they continue to support terrorist activities, particularly across southern Syria into Lebanon. The Israelis are watching that corridor very carefully. Of course, they're attacking any Iranian installation or movement of convoys consistently there, almost monthly, sometimes two or three times a month, not often publicized. So the Israelis are looking at that. You got the Saudis that are very concerned about the oil fields in their northeast section, which borders on up to the Persian Gulf there. Iranians have plans to take over those oil fields from Saudi Arabia at some point in time. Those are things you don't normally hear about. And at the same time, the economic situation in Iran is very poor. Many people out of work, poverty. The people now are uprising. They're going to continue to have protests over there. And they formed a group in the United States opposing Iran for a new free and democratic Iran called Cyrus Horse. Cyrus Horse. And that's a coalition of all the different opposition and cultural groups within Iran. A lot of people don't realize it, Matt, but they have six different cultural groups within Iran. Persians are just a part of that. You got the Awazis, you got the Azerbaijanis, you got the Baluchis, you got the Kurds, and you have a small group called monarchists who still support the king and Shah of Iran. If they were to have a new government in Iran, they would like to bring a monarchy back, but that won't be supported. And then you have the Mujahideen al-Khalq, the MEK, which is a group based out of France, north of Paris. So a lot of things are happening over there, and we'll have to see. But Iran's not going to back down. They expect us to back down. They expect the British to back down. But this time they met somebody and a leader, such as President Trump, and he's not going to back down. And our president doesn't want war. He really doesn't. But if you press the United States enough and you start attacking these tankers and free trade, then action is going to be taken against them.
So there's been a lot of discussion on if something does happen in that area of the world, that the Iranians would lock the Strait of Hormuz and oil prices would go skyrocketing. A lot of it, I think, is just clear speculation. What do you think would actually happen in that type of a scenario?
Well, there's enough naval forces over there to overcome any Iranian force that would attempt to close the Sea of Hormuz. The Israelis and the United States, at least as of last year, had 75 different targets in case they would launch against Iran. And those would not be urban areas. They would be command and control centers, the fleet forces, the ports, missile launch areas, and locations where the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, Islamic Guard, is are stationed. And so we're all set to do that, along with the Israelis and the Saudis, to take down those targets in a chronological order. So it depends on the Iranians. What they do.
It does. I mean, would they engage in a full-scale war? Would they activate Hezbollah elements throughout the world and try to create chaos everywhere? Would they actually do that?
Well, I think they would be so overcome within the first 12 hours, Matt, they would have trouble launching anything. I mean, they'd be able to get something out. But the first attack really is a cyber attack to close down their computers, which then, guide and manage their missile launch systems and their aircraft. So the Israelis have a good handle in their fighter jets. They actually can go in with laser type of weapons and deaden their computers. So that's part of the plan as well.
Well, it's going to
be over very quickly. It would be over very quickly, and it doesn't involve ground troops other than intel people that may be on the ground.
Would there be Hezbollah elements around the world that would then kind of go to ground and try to create terrorism and chaos throughout parts of the world, especially in the West?
Well, that's always threatened. Of course, there could be some, but I think that would be minimal.
Okay. I want to talk, too, about the idea about China. I forgot to ask you. Forgive me. China really does have a goal to take over a very significant portion of their part of the world, and they've drawn maps about it. They've had generals speak out about it. If you could, talk about this idea that China really wants to be the leader of the world or in control of the world and supplant the United States.
Well, I think that's probably their long-term view. I would think that's exactly what they're thinking. And they're pushing ahead, as I've stated, economically all over the world. They're expanding all their influence in the South China Sea. They're building up, as you know, on some of those islands out there, a maritime naval port launch capability there using their expanding Navy. They've got some new carriers. So, yes, they want to be the dominant force, and they're moving towards that. I'm not sure their economy is going to be able to handle it, though, because President Trump has put the pressure on them over there, and the economy is weakening. They're not gaining any strength. And you got to have money, of course, to do all of these things. They take money to do that, then they're taking money away from the people of China. You know what happens then? Protests, uprisings. And so they know that could happen if they try to push too much to dominate the world. So there's got to be a balance in there somewhere, for sure.
For sure. Well, I want to shift back to the United States of America. There has been, you know, as we've talked about on previous shows, this attack on the president, but we're seeing quite a rise of Marxists and Islamists here in this country right now, and particularly among Marxists. If you could talk to the listeners a little bit about what your thoughts are on that and what we can expect in the run-up to the 2020 elections.
Well, the move of the Democrats and others to the left, to socialism and communism, and, of course, attacking at all times capitalism and what has made this country great. I think we're in the first phase of a real civil war here, not necessarily that we're fighting and shooting at each other. But culturally and philosophically, we have a big divide in this country. Now, we know the president's base is growing. He really doesn't have any strong presidential candidate that I see in the Democratic Party that's going to beat him. But they're going to continue to press on the campuses. They've got to make sure Antifa, like you have over there in Oregon, is designated as a terrorist organization. We've got to start taking action in our inner cities, like the president has, where we have Baltimore now, and the press every day now. The blight of our inner cities. We look at the homeless in San Francisco, in Seattle, I understand, even in Portland. And so we've got to move very quickly and have a strategy how to rebuild and take care of our cities today, because these Democratic mayors over the years have done nothing. And we know there's been a lot of money in Congressman Cummings' district there in Maryland. Billions of dollars have been allocated. I saw about an amount of about $14 billion, and they don't know where that money has gone to.
Wow.
And it's a lot of corruption.
A lot of corruption. And do you think that there's going to be an escalation of violence from some of these groups like the Socialist Rifle Association, Redneck Revolts, Antifa, here in the run-up to 2020?
Well, I think you're going to see that unless you tamp them down. And basically, you look at them as terrorist organizations. And it may take the federal forces to do that if the state police won't do it or the police in these communities won't do it. And we saw what happened in New York where they were throwing water on our policemen. We've seen in Portland where the policemen have held back against the attacks on an innocent young man over there. So the more they escalate on that side of things, the more the majority of the American people are going to start standing up too. And there'll be bloodshed. There will be bloodshed for sure. But I see this in a phase one type of situation right now that could really escalate. And it will if President Trump is not elected. It really is going to get bad.
If people want to find out more information, read some of your articles, where can they go online?
Well, we have two foundations, Matt. One is the Soldiers Memorial Fund, which is in memory of my son, who we lost in Special Forces in 2004, and that's soldiersmemorialfund.org. They can donate support there. We help families, veterans, armed, active duty individuals and families. And then we have now for 12 years the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation, and the website on that is standupamericaus.org. And we would hope all your listeners would join us at Stand Up America, as thousands have across the country.
General Paul Vallely, thanks once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. Appreciate everything that you're doing, and keep up the fight. And just, you know, everything that we're facing, I always kind of hearken back to all those people that have sacrificed so that we could be here. So thank you for bringing up Soldiers Memorial Fund.
Thank you, Matt. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
All right. God bless.
Thank you.
Major General Paul Vallely retired. SoldiersMemorialFund.org, also Stand Up America US. Take a look at them online, and just another way to get involved. And you know, all the things that are happening in the world right now, one of the key parts that we have to do is just is focus on being Americans again. The Constitution is what unites us, and all these other things and attempts to divide us along racial lines and socioeconomic, all that stuff is an attempt to make us weak so socialists can try to take over. The attempt to eviscerate morality comes from Chapter 2 of the Communist Manifesto. You can read it yourself. So it makes us weak, so we're easier to control and take over. The rest of the world is looking to see what happens. President Trump is doing what he can. And I've talked to people inside, outside. I mean, he is doing what he can to buy time and to give us the chance to restore a God-honoring constitutional republic. And you have the Antifa folks and their sympathizers. Got the Islamists and their sympathizers here in America who really don't want to see America as we grew up with, as we know historically to be the greatest country in the world that put out the most missionaries, the most the best spreading of the gospel, the most parachurch ministries. Is it worth fighting for? You heard General Vallely talk about his son. I lost a friend of mine. Many that have served in combat have lost friends who died wanting to know that we as Americans took seriously their legacy to leave freedom and liberty to the next generation. Anyway, if you get the opportunity, say a prayer for our troops overseas as well right now. And may God bless all of you. Thank you for all the prayers and support. And may He make this generation the greatest one.